Thanks for tuning in to Connect First, a podcast that gets after leadership at its core. I'm your host, Command Sergeant Major Sean Carnes, the First Corps Command Sergeant Major, and today I welcome a great guest, our NCOA Commandant, Sergeant Major Suessler. Thank you very much for coming on today's podcast.
Yes, Sergeant Major, thanks for having me.
Of course. And so, as I said at our last podcast, my definition of leadership, leadership is a relationship built on inspiration, trust, serving, and caring for others. And today we're going to talk about leadership challenges. And, you know, some of them leadership challenges can deteriorate that relationship, that trust that we have within the organization and your leadership. You know, and one big one that I always think about challenges is conflict, right? And the Army does not do a good job at teaching us how to deal with conflict. You know, and we have great manuals that talk about conflict. You know, ADP 6-22, ATP 6-22.6, team building. Both of them are great manuals, and they have conflict in it. And there's other manuals that have it too. But actually, you can read about it, but actually doing it and dealing with conflict is something different. Mm-hmm. So, you know, from your perspective, have you seen good or bad how some leaders deal with conflict?
Well, conflict management, oftentimes we get it bad. We do it very badly when we're young, and then we figure it out as we've done it badly mm-hmm. enough times, and we get better at it. But paramount with conflict resolution is dignity and respect. So everybody, regardless of what's going on, the scenario, regardless of how somebody might be offended or anything like that, any individual or multiple individuals in any sort of conflict deserve to get treated with dignity and respect. And so I have seen several that have gone badly, and I have handled them badly even myself. One time comes to mind, I laugh at it now, but at the time I felt really badly. I had just finished reading a book, and then when a soldier came to me about a significant conflict that he was having in his life, the advice I gave him was really bad, and it probably was good for him much later after the conflict, but it wasn't good at the time. Unfortunately, I told him that his problems weren't unique, and that he kind of just needed to get over it. It wasn't very well received from him. And as he walked away from me, he did a little introspection, and I realized that a soldier dealing with that conflict at the time was not, he didn't want to hear that his problems were not unique to him, and that may have been insignificant to him. So I definitely didn't give him the respect that he needed and didn't treat him nearly as well as I should have. So, but I think when you're dealing with conflict, especially in the workplace, that it's important to keep in mind that everyone, regardless of what happened in the situation, deserves to be treated with dignity and respect.
Oh man, agree 100% with you. And you know, you said a couple good points there. Number one thing is we don't do it well when we're younger, like a sergeant, staff sergeant, mm-hmm. sergeant first class. I didn't do it well neither, right? And I didn't understand, you know, that caring part, as I talk about in leadership, my leadership definition, but then also dignity and respect. You say a good piece there right now, right? Because you know, how we deal with conflict, you know, we're A-type personalities, mm-hmm. and we want to go straight into the fight. Boom, right? Instead of, hey, letting emotions relax a little bit, then engage, right? As you talked about dignity and respect. If your emotions are up and you're fired up, guess what? You're not giving anyone dignity and respect, mm-hmm. right? You're going in to win, and that's it. You're not looking out for anybody else, not being empathetic at all, and you're just getting after. I mean, I had the same thing. When I was a young sergeant first class, great platoon leader, and you know, we had some conflict. And I went straight head on, right? To where we almost got in a fight, you know, fisticuffs. And that was nowhere near the right thing to do. Mm-hmm. Again, I had had to learn how to deal with conflict, let the emotions go down. And if anything, you know, if something bothers you, hey, and you know, you just can't get rid of that anger that's in you, right? Maybe, you know, hey, sleep it off and engage later so that emotion's down and you can think about it. Two, engage with somebody and give them that dignity and respect, and you being empathetic to them when you're engaging them.
Yeah, you bring up a great point, Sergeant Major, about managing emotions and emotional intelligence, and how it takes a certain kind of leader to really understand themselves and how their emotions come into play. I had an incident as a battalion Sergeant Major where an NCO on gate guard got into a verbal, nearly physical altercation with a DOD civilian on that was managing the installation security. And the SOPs were a little conflicting. Ultimately, she got relieved as the sergeant of the guard and then had to come see me. And what she didn't realize, what I quickly allowed her to understand, was that she allowed somebody else to manipulate her own emotions, to control her own emotions. And she really gave somebody else control over her by allowing their outburst to cause her emotions to anger, and then she lost control of herself. And I think that's important to understand, that your own emotional intelligence, oftentimes confused with social intelligence, but the having your own emotional intelligence to understand how you will react to certain situations and certain stimuli.
Yeah, and so it's a good point. You know, we were discussing, like, you having the conflict and going, you know, after somebody, if that's how you want to say it. But what if someone comes to you, and how do you deal with that, right? And I just had a great experience. I know it's been a few weeks now. So I was on a flight coming back here to JBLM. And, you know, everyone buys their, you know, seats and everything like that, but then you upgrade, right? And I'd gotten upgraded. And the plane wasn't full, so they were moving us into different seats, right? And so, you know, I was asking the main manager to come on there and said, hey, you all got to move. And then, you know, there's other ones and like that, and they're getting mad, right? And he's getting mad. And so I was like, hang on, let me talk to him. So I pulled him off to the side, and I said to him, I was like, hey, you're the manager, right? He goes, yeah. I said, knowing that you're going to have to move people out of these seats that are upgraded, knowing that people are going to be mad because you're moving out because they paid for these seats, you should have came on here with a solution, i.e., hey, you know, get a hold of the airlines and they will pay you back, or hey, we'll give you a refund. Or even better yet, I was like, hey, if we move after takeoff, can we move back to the seats, all right? And he was like, yeah, that's a good idea, right? And so I engaged him, no emotions, to help him come up with the solution, right? Instead of it not coming from me as conflict, but his conflict, and I'm helping him or her deal with that conflict.
Well, I think what can't be lost there is how he was receptive to your advice. You know, a lot of people who are in charge are like, oh, this is my operation, I'm owning it, and regardless of what emotion he was going to get out of everybody else, a lot of times people aren't willing to listen to somebody else's input. So I think it's important to recognize that person who was in charge was willing. You were a complete stranger, right?
Oh yeah, stranger.
Complete strangers willing to give him advice, and he was receptive of it.
That, so that's a good point, right? So reception of your advice given to somebody. And so, you know, what I always dealt with is if someone is not receptive, then I go into questioning mode, right? And asking them questions. Why are you not receptive, right? And I might not say it exactly that way, but finding out the why they're not being receptive to what I'm trying to give them good feedback or give them information or give them help. Why are you not wanting to receive this? What's behind that wall that you have up right now, right? And trying to get that defensive down. So if you ask questions, that usually bring the defenses down because now they have to think. And they're not thinking about their emotions. They're thinking about answering my question. And then emotions go down. And then we start getting into a conversation to help them see through their conflict that they might be having.
What sort of conflicts do you see in your workplace at your level, Sergeant Major?
Yeah, so I'll go back actually when I was in 2nd Infantry Division.
Okay.
And I had a Sergeant First Class come up there one time to see me. And she was coming up there to see me actually with her leadership because she felt, hey, I have done my platoon sergeant time. I am not doing any more platoon sergeant time. You know, if you look in 600-25, 24 months, right? And she was not coming up off that. Just like as we were talking about, right? She was not coming, hey, it says 24 months. My mentors are saying 24 months to me, right? And so then I was like, okay, why do you feel that you don't need to go back into platoon sergeant position. Please explain to me how you have figured it out, because I didn't figure it out in 24 months.
Yeah.
I would say you're just figuring it out, yeah, maybe, right, if you're lucky at 24 months. And as we peeled back the onion on her, she realized, okay, there was some steps I missed, i.e. leader development, right? I asked her, you know, as we went through some questions, I asked her, hey, so tell me about your leader development plan when you're a platoon sergeant. And she couldn't come up with one, right? And so as we started peeling back more, there was some gaps that she was, you know, had a blind spot to and didn't realize that I was given to her. And she was like, okay, I understand, Sergeant Major. Okay, it makes sense for me. I probably still need to go back and do platoon sergeant time. Don't get me wrong. Our conversation lasted for about an hour and a half.
Yeah.
Because I had to peel back the onion to get her, get off her blind spot, to get the, you know, her stakes were high, the wall was up, and to get that wall down, that emotional down, to where, hey, she understood that there were some gaps and she needs some assistance.
Okay. So, you know, you bring up a great point about leader development and the, kind of the lack thereof. You know, very recently I had a conversation about leader development and how quickly that is removed off the calendar when op tempo gets busy and, hey, we gotta nix, we gotta scratch something off the calendar, what goes? You know, some sort of professional development, LPD, NCOPD, junior enlisted professional development, something like that. And we talked about, you know, how do we still do the things that we're supposed to do as leaders in the Army on top of all the other requirements we have? You know, we have to do leader development. We have to in order to continue to be successful. But we also have all of these other things that are coming down, whether it be you know, our mandatory maintenance stuff or just some higher headquarters mission that comes down. But we still, without a doubt, have to do leader development. And so what I offer people is that you've got to figure out ways to identify the routine things that you do routinely. And then once you identify them, you grab people by the ear, drag them along, say, hey, this is how I do this. This is, I'm doing this at my level. When you're at my level, you're going to need to do this. And the easy example I use is something like monthly reports as a first sergeant. You know, I ran into an experience as a battalion CSM where one of my first sergeants went on leave, and the next month, every eligible soldier got either a waiver or sent to the promotion board. And it was because the platoon sergeant that was filling in didn't understand what they were doing with monthly reports and just simply circled yes with the commander. And the commander was brand new, was unfamiliar with it. And so so ultimately what we had is somebody filling in that was unfamiliar with how to be a first sergeant. And so, you know, that's the easy one. The other one I like to throw out there is ceremonies. A lot of people get put in a position where they have to run a ceremony and they're just completely unfamiliar with them, because they've never been taught how to do ceremony. It's not in PMEs or it's not in any of that stuff. But if a leader is identifying, hey, I do this without even thinking about it. You know, at the team leader level, that team leader comes to work and takes accountability without even thinking about it, just because that's what they do as a team leader in the Army. But that, you know, let's say a PFC, he or she doesn't come to work and take accountability because they've never been, it's never been expected of them or it's never been taught to them. So if you can identify the things, the routine things that you do routinely, that's probably the best way I can come up with to describe it, and then teach those to your subordinates, it'll help you get away from scheduled calendar events that oftentimes people end up scratching because you just don't get the population you want, which of course I learned the hard way. Just do it regardless of the people you get. The ones that show up will benefit. The ones that don't, you can either reschedule or do a face-to-face with them. But that on-the-job type of stuff is something that you have to identify as leader development opportunities. Everything is a leader development opportunity.
Agree. And so that's a good point, too, is as we talk about conflict on a schedule.
Yes.
Right? And so here's what I always looked at on conflict at a schedule. First thing, you can say, hey, no, we're not doing this other stuff because we have leader development on
it.
That's a way. You said about doing routine things routinely. So, hey, let's get that as a battle rhythm event. So it's on the battle rhythm. Because most of the time when it's on a battle rhythm, it will stay there, right?
Yeah.
Most of the time.
Yeah, it's protected.
Or another good one that I like to always use is actually, hey, let's do leader development during lunch. What a better way to do leader development than breaking bread with somebody, right? So you go into chat hall, because that's protected. That's not coming off
that's
the
right.
calendar, right? And so you go to the chat hall and you do leader development during lunchtime. And that was, you know, three ways that I've learned to help deal with conflict on a schedule. Another way to deal with conflict on a schedule is, what are your priorities?
Yeah.
What's the commander's priorities, right? So if you're aligned with his priorities and leader development, most of the time if you look into training guidance, leader development's in there, right?
Mm-hmm.
Hey, I can say no to something that comes on a conflict on a schedule because it is in line with the commander's training guidance of leader development, and we're gonna keep that on the calendar, right? So then you have to defend it a little bit to keep it on the calendar. So conflict on the calendar is very important. And how do you deal with that? I think there's a lot of ways to deal with it, as a couple examples I just presented.
Yeah. To go along with conflict resolution, I like to discuss the amount of courage it takes to actually say something. Leadership is challenging. It's challenging, and it requires courage. It requires courage to have those tough conversations, like you talked about with that NCO who had done her. She didn't want to hear that she may need to continue to do her KD time, but it requires courage to have those hard conversations. You know, those same hard conversations as it relates to our corrosive issues. Those topics aren't easy to talk about, and that individual, that whether it's a leader or a peer or even a subordinate, it requires courage to have those difficult conversations with people.
I agree, 100% with you. And that's, again, as we talked about at the beginning, we don't do it well in the beginning, mm-hmm. right? Because as a sergeant, I mean, you're learning about leadership. I you know, as my last podcast, I say it took me about 10 years in the military to understand yeah. leadership and to understand conflict management and conflict resolution and how do you do that. And I did it wrong too. I would, you know, what I tell everyone is, you know, read, mm-hmm. right? There's, you know, in the manuals, it kind of tells you how to do conflict resolution. There's plenty of books out there you can read, plenty of articles that you can read, and then try them, right? And you might fail. Again,
yeah.
I failed with that platoon leader.
You probably
leader,
will fail.
Right? Exactly. I failed with that platoon leader. But you just keep doing it. Just keep doing it and figure that, because that's what you're getting at, the courage. Do it. Just yeah. do it. And if you fell at it, you fell at it. Then, okay, I felt at that. Let me tweak it a little bit. And how can I deal with the next conflict that I might have that yeah. comes about and tweak the way I did this one, because this one didn't work, so I have to do something different.
Yeah. Well, so that you and Sergeant Major Powers talked about allowing people to fail. And, you know, not only does it tie to conflict, handling conflict, but that's just leadership in general. You know, so many times we elevate things up to our level or the first sergeant level mm-hmm. because we don't want to allow it to fail, or we might not be happy with the way they did it. But you know, we did a reenlistment ceremony at the NCO Academy recently, and I told them, hey, this, you know, I'm gonna allow you, the people I allowed to run the ceremony, I'm gonna allow you to run this ceremony just because I want to see how it goes. And they displayed a flag in front of another flag, and we you know, we did the oath in front of that. But when you look back, you look at the intent, you know, what's the intent of the ceremony? Even something like, you know, running an ACFT, did it go off flawlessly? You know, you put a young NCO in charge of it, it might not go off flawlessly. You might have all kinds of mistakes in there, but you know, did it meet the intent? Was it completed? Did all six events get taken? Was it done safely? Was it done in under 2 hours by regulation? If you hit those things, I think it's a success. And a lot of times, they just get ridiculed for any sort of failure that might take place in those events. But you gotta allow that delegation to take place so that way they can fail, but ultimately it becomes a success.
Oh man. I agree. I'm so, you know, and so you can have a conflict within yourself, not empowering people, right? Because you want to control the situation.
Yeah.
And I agree 100% with you. if you put out guidance, right, I want to empower somebody, put out guidance to somebody and exactly, let them run them with it. Now, obviously we inspect what we expect, mm-hmm. right? And if it fails, was it because I didn't put out enough guidance? And that's where you have to have that conversation. Okay, you made these mistakes. Why did you make the mistakes? So you have to do some question, right? To find out, okay, maybe it was them and they're thinking, and you have to point them in the right direction. Or maybe, hey, okay, I didn't give you enough guidance, so next time I have to give you more guidance. But there's a conflict in with ourselves, and you gotta let it go and let them fail. So I agree 100%, you gotta let them fail, and then you go back and, okay, is it something that they need to correct and I gotta help them with? Or is it, hey, I need to get better at giving guidance to them when I empower them to do something?
Yeah, you reminded me of a story when I was a first sergeant, and we were working shift work. I was in a strategic signal location, and I had the night shift. I had given some guidance about a uniform the next day for a range, and I wanted to put eyes on their uniform. And so there were two shifts. I gave them both instructions that I was going to be in at like 18:30 or something like that, and I wanted to inspect their uniforms. The first shift I came in at, they were standing in formation when I showed up, gloves on, iPro on, everything. They were ready for inspection, right? The second shift I walked up, and everything was in a pile in the corner in the signal facility. They were just working on their normal shift mm-hmm. work stuff, and they weren't anywhere close to being ready for inspection. I kind of swallowed my pride a little bit, and I went and talked to my mentor, who was my brigade sergeant major at the time, and he turned it back around on me, and he said, well, did you tell him? And I was like, well, I just assumed they knew that was the expectation, right. That if I told you I was going to come up here and inspect your uniform, that you would be prepared for the inspection. And he was like, no, well, you remember coming up in the Army when you were told, you were given the little canoe diagram of your OCIE layout, and you were told exactly where and when everything needed to be placed? It was like, there was no question. There was no question whatsoever what the standard was. But you had that expectation. When I showed up, it was going to be there, and it wasn't. And it was very humbling for me and a learning lesson for me.
Oh, and you know, very good point about the inspection thing is, I think it goes with guidance, but then also leaders being proactive to say, okay, did I get enough guidance? Do I need to come back to you and get more guidance, right? So there's some proactivity there and asking them questions. Do I understand that? When I was a private, I can remember doing, TA-50 when we did it on the beds. You remember on our beds, right? So me and my good roommate, Felipe Brown, we would lay our stuff out like that. But we went above and beyond because we knew it was room inspection. We'd wax our floor, you know, and then we'd roll our socks and our T-shirts mm-hmm. and everything like that. So the first time our squad leader came in and inspected us, he walked in and then he turned right back around. I was like, did we jack something up, right? And then our team leader came up and he was like, hey, great job. Hey, you guys got the rest of the day off, right? After that, we never, ever got inspected after that. They would make us do the inspection.
Yeah.
They would never come in because they knew that we were going above and beyond and to make it happen, right? With the little guidance that he gave us.
Yeah.
Other rooms you go into were a nightmare, right? So I think it goes both ways is, did I get enough guidance? And if I didn't get enough guidance, do I have that courage mm-hmm. to come back and ask you a question saying, hey, what exactly do you want, Sergeant, right? Or Sergeant Major or First Sergeant? I'm not quite sure what you need. So we have to also make sure that, you know, they trust that, hey, I'm going to, you know, not go crazy. Hey, I gave you enough guidance. No, that, hey, okay, what else do you need to know? Here's the stuff I told you. What else do you need to know, right? To help them out. So I think you bring up a good point.
I struggle with that as a commandant at the NCO Academy because it's my guidance, and I think I gave enough, and I send them on their way to go execute, you know, aggressively, mm-hmm. and then I find myself pulling somebody aside and saying, hey, is my intent clear? Is my guidance clear? Because sometimes when I'm thinking about the conversation afterwards, I wonder if I gave clear guidance. And being new in the position, I don't know if they have the courage to have that conversation with me because we're feeling each other out. Mm-hmm. But you're right. As that senior person, we've got to make sure that that they have the courage to tell us if it's unclear, or we have the thinking to ask and say, hey, was that clear? Was anything unclear in what I've put out? Because there are a lot of times it will be.
Yeah, sure. And so now they're having a conflict in themselves, right? And when they start having a conflict in themselves that, am I fearful of coming and talking to my leader and asking mm-hmm. them questions, then we have a problem, right? That they're having that conflict and they're fearful to come ask for your guidance. So then we have to look at ourselves and say, okay, why are they fearful to come ask me for guidance, right? Again, you went and seen that one inspection and then you went to the other one and they didn't get it, right? So why did they not come and ask you, or what was the guidance one clear enough? Because sometimes they're nervous to come talk to you, and maybe it's just, they're young sergeant and they're nervous to come talk to you. You've got to get them, comfortable and saying, hey, it's okay to come back and ask me questions, right? Because I'm empathetic, I'm humble, maybe I didn't put out enough guidance to you. So then they don't have conflict in themselves that they feel comfortable to automatically come back and ask you mm-hmm. questions.
It's about creating an environment. And I believe you and Sergeant Major Powers talked about that in your first podcast mm-hmm. as well, about the environment that you create. Is it a learning environment? Do we allow candid discussion? Do we allow failure? Have we created an environment like that where people are willing to come up and ask, the commander, hey, sir, can you clarify this? Because this didn't make any sense. But it's about creating that environment in the organization.
Sure. Agree 100% with you. Because what you don't want is a tension environment. Mm-hmm. If there's a tension environment, there might be some toxicity in there. And that's what we don't want, right? We got to be open. And you've got to actually be open, right? I was just talking to somebody the other day, and she was having problems when she gave guidance to her subordinates, and she was trying to, be open with them. Mm-hmm. And so, we were kind of talking through that, and I was talking to her, and I said, what's your body language when you're talking to them, right? Because people read body language.
Nonverbal cues.
Yeah, exactly. And she didn't even think about it. She goes, maybe it's my body language. Because she's trying, she really is trying, and she's trying to be authentic. But some people try too hard to be authentic.
Yeah.
Instead of just relaxing, right? They be too hard, and then that shows in their body language that they're not being authentic. So then now the person has conflict, like, you're faking this authenticity to be authentic with me. So I said, what you need to do is ask them. Hey, I'm trying to be authentic. My background or my past, right? Whatever it is, I'm really trying to get better, right? And so you have to open yourself up mm-hmm. so you get rid of that conflict and that people are comfortable to give you feedback to help you out.
Yeah, I keep going back to this courage thing, but opening yourself up creates, you gotta have courage to open that, create that vulnerability, That's big for somebody in our position to expose a vulnerability and have the courage to do so. But that's something I've always wanted subordinates to understand, is that the only difference between me and them is simply been in the Army longer than them. But that person who wanted authentic, genuine feedback as a young sergeant to make sure I was doing the right thing, that doesn't just go away. When we reach this level, we're still wondering, we're still talking to our spouse, hey, was my speech okay? We're still having these internal battles with ourselves to make sure that we feel like we want that genuine, authentic feedback. And we have to understand people see us differently. Mm-hmm. I have a hard time getting over that because I still desperately seek out that feedback, and I just don't get it from a lot of the people that I trust and would like to get it from.
Yeah. So you're spot on. When you get up this level, you definitely don't always get the authentic feedback that you need, right? Because people are nervous. Not, I don't think necessarily fearful of you. Now, it could be some leaders, but they, trying to be nice.
Yes.
So I always, I get feedback from the wife, right? Mm-hmm. She will give me some candid feedback. I'm like, whew. And you know, it's one of the ones that.
Maybe not that candid.
Yeah,
right?
I really don't want to hear that, but I need to.
That's right.
You know, and she's good at hearing that, or she's good at giving that feedback to me, and I appreciate it. Hey, I just want to say thank you very much.
It's a pleasure.
For coming on to Connect First and being my guest. You know, it was awesome talking to you. And obviously to the guests out here who are watching, thanks for tuning in to Connect First. Stay tuned for more episodes. Thank you very much.
Hey, thanks for tuning in to Connect First podcast, where we discuss leadership at its core. You can find Connect First on all your major podcast streaming platforms. Follow First Core on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram for information on upcoming episodes, as well as all things First Core. Rate, review, and subscribe to us on YouTube, and click that notification bell so you'll know exactly when we drop a new episode. Till next time.